Good evening, everyone. Welcome to our final Thursday of this calendar year. Our final Thursday meeting, of course, next Thursday there is a Thursday, but we won't be there here. As we near the end of the year, the darkness deepens. Actually, this weekend on Saturday will be the shortest day of the year, the longest night. And the solstice, the winter solstice, is a moment of embracing stillness and the fading light and the cold, at least in the northern hemisphere. In the southern hemisphere, it's the opposite which is happening. We're making a journey from light to dark, and in the southern hemisphere, they're making a journey from dark to light. Although the following day on Sunday, we have already begun our journey from darkness to light because the day after the winter solstice is already longer than the day before. And these are just artificial markers that we make, artificial in the sense of conceptual markers that our mind makes to define and grasp, to understand what to give make us understand what's happening in our what we think of as our world. But actually, the voyage of the journey from darkness to light is always ongoing, and the journey from light to dark is always ongoing. We can't find where one begins and one ends. But this is a good time of year to, like I said, embrace that the quiet, the silence, the darkness, the returning inward more. As spring, when spring is upon us, and then summer, it's already something very different. Long days, short nights. Light activity. We see it all around us, the plants, the trees, the animals, ourselves. We're filled with all kinds of activity, outward activity when spring and summer are upon us. And in fall and winter, we turn more inward. And you know, this when we talk about the shortest day and the longest night, these are symbols of the dualities that we live with, whether it be light, dark, warm, cold, activity, stillness, out, in, all of the, you know, what they call in Chinese, the yin and the yang. Which we can understand energetically. We can feel what is active energy and passive energy, just if we think of it in those terms. But we can also, you know, experience it as light and dark, and seasons. And it's useful actually to be attentive to these symbols that we have of shortest day, longest day, night and day, whatever it is that we qualify things as. And it's useful to then to see what that means. You know, what does that mean for us in our lives? What does that mean for us in our practice? Someone recently wrote to me and said, apologized for not having come regularly to Dokusan, and that they felt like they had let their practice of koans fall away. And then they added that they felt they weren't mature enough to be work, their practice was not mature enough to work on koans, and that when they did feel more mature, that they hoped they would be able to come back to koans and they would let me know and all of this. And because they began the email with an apology, I wrote back and said, there's no need to apologize. Your practice is yours, whatever you do, whether you practice with koans or you don't, whether you come to Dokusan or you don't, all of that is your practice. And there's no need to apologize for any of it. That's your practice, I said to the person. And you are in the heart of it. You are that. So no need to apologize for who you are. And the person wrote back and thanked me and, appreciated those comments. And maybe that will help the person not necessarily come back to Dokusan and koans, but to appreciate their practice, appreciate their life, appreciate who and what they are here and now and where they are. But when we become caught up in the dualities of good and bad, this and that, fast and slow, advanced, not advanced, then we don't appreciate what is, where we are. So, of course, when I say everything is practice, whatever you do is practice, that's the absolute point of view. Then there, from the relative point of view, there are different practices. There are different koans. There are different techniques. There is a difference between sitting, like we did for half an hour, and not sitting for half an hour. There's a difference, right? And the taking or, opening to the absolute point of view, of everything is practice, allows us to appreciate the different practices and where we are with those practices and what it is to sit on a cushion and meditate and what it is to stand up and watch the television, or whatever else we might do. And appreciate the differences and not judge. If we can see that absolute point of view that everything is practice, then we can say, okay, when I'm watching the television, that's practice too, but it's a different kind of practice. We can appreciate the difference. And we might then, when we appreciate those differences, we have a better chance of being able to choose what it is we want to do in our life. What do we want to do at this moment? The end of the year, like this, when we enter into the darkness and the depth of winter and the cold, and things are less visible at night. Part of the reason that many of the world's, even the first the pagan practices, but then spiritual traditions, put festivals of light and celebrations of light in this middle of the dead of winter, to bring light to it, to illuminate it, to honor this darkness and remind us that there is light. We chant, within darkness there is light, but do not look for it. Within light there is darkness, but don't look for it. Because then if you're looking, then you start looking somewhere else. But if we can bring the light in the heart of the darkness, then we can appreciate both. In fact, we can't have light without dark. And we can't have dark without light. They're codependent. Like the yin and the yang symbol, it's codependent. And one is always present in, both are always present. I read this description of an experiment that the astrophysicist David Bohm, I think it's pronounced Bohm, did, where he had two cylinders, one that fit inside the other, and they were transparent, the cylinders, and he filled them with water and then put drops of ink into the water. And I guess the consistency of the ink with the consistency of the water meant that the drops just sat there. They just stayed intact as drops. But if he turned the cylinder one way, like I think the inner cylinder, if he turned it one way, maybe it was the outer cylinder, I don't know. If he turned it one way, the drops dispersed and you couldn't see them anymore. If you turned it back the other way, however, the drops reappeared. I don't know the scientific explanation for this, but he gave a name to it. I can't remember what it was, but it was pointing to what we're talking about in the relative and the absolute, that the relative is always there. We don't see it according to the circumstances. You know, in the absolute, when you turn it this way, you don't see anything. You don't see any differences. It's all one. But if you turn it the other way, then they appear. Or, I mean, it's a bit simplistic, but that is, you know, in the darkness, there's a lot of things we don't see. But if we shine the light on it, all of a sudden we see everything. When we take the light away, those things are still there. It's all this, nothing has changed. We can't see it because it's the darkness. And that's the absolute is in this metaphor, is that darkness. So can we then now in this season of darkness turn our attention to that and appreciate that darkness? The mystery, the not knowing. Not in the sense of confusion or fear, because often when we go out in the darkness, we're afraid because we can't see. It's so unfamiliar. It's very rare in our lives today where, well, maybe some of you who live like in isolated countryside places, you have a moonless night and a starless night, and you really can't see when you go outside and walk. If there's no streetlights, you're far from homes and roads, you really can't see. Most of the rest of us, we go out in the dark, you can still see. You just can't see as well. I sometimes go out in my garden at night to find my cat, and I put the flashlight on my phone, but actually, I wouldn't really need it. I know the path in my garden well enough so that I could follow it. And once I'm out there for 5 minutes, my eyes adjust, and there's enough ambient light around in the community so I could see. But our initial reaction, our initial reflex is to turn on the light. We don't want this darkness. And yet the darkness is brilliant as well. The depth, you know, we can experience depth in a way that we can't in light. Of course, with light, we experience depth in a different way, but we can experience the mystery of life in a different way. We can experience the infinite in a really concrete way with the darkness. And, you know, when we think of like the medieval era, was a deeply spiritual time. And because there was so much darkness, you know, they didn't have what we call in France les Lumières. You know, and the Renaissance and the philosophers who, you know, brought science and intelligence and rationality to the culture. Medieval culture was not like that. Medieval culture was steeped in mystery and spirituality, and heart. Of course, there was also very bitter things that happened and terrible, cruel things that happened in the medieval times. But it was really a time of, in England, they even call it the Dark Ages. Partly because it's kind of mysterious what really happened in those, they went from Roman times in the UK, in England, to like this dark period where, the tribes from Scandinavia invaded and there were all these other tribes and it was all kind of confusing and they call it the Dark Ages. And then the Renaissance came along and of course the Middle Ages came and but the medieval times were still very dark. And once that came along, then with the Renaissance, spirituality changed. And the mystery no longer was the center of life. I don't know what we call those, the les Lumières in English. I don't know if if outside of France people even talk about it, but it's a whole set of, Voltaire and Diderot and all sorts of philosophers who brought to the forefront rationality and intelligence, and which was important. They did. They brought amazing things, and they made encyclopedias and they introduced beautiful things. And the Renaissance also brought, fabulous art and music, and the world changed. That it was no longer steeped in that mystery. So winter is kind of like medieval times for us, if we allow ourselves to experience that. It's deeply spiritual, it's deeply mysterious. It's a time to withdraw, to reflect. I'm really looking forward to this year over the new year. I will be doing a retreat, which I have not done for years, and I really love doing a meditation retreat over the new year. I still do on the 31st at midnight, like from say 11:30 until 12:15. I still do meditate with my husband. We always sit, so we sit across that time when we're going from one year to the other. In theory and in the conceptual world, we're going from one year to another. But experientially, we're just sitting. We're just here. Nothing has changed. Except everything has moved. The moment has moved, but it's just sitting. So I look forward to a retreat. And actually, Frank's Roshi's successor will receive his transmission that night. Which is very special. That's very powerful, huh? Because we always give the transmissions at supposedly at midnight. It's usually a little earlier, but that's very special that he will receive it on that night. So that's a way of turning attention to the inside, to the darkness, to the mystery, instead of, we've gone into this mode of celebration, right? So people go and have parties and become very excited and drink and do all kinds of parties and activities at that moment. Rather than stopping or just not e stopping to be with the movement, we have a tendency in our culture to add, make something of that moment, instead of turning towards the darkness and the inner world. Can we pay attention to this journey that we're on from light to dark and then from right away then from dark to light, or from old. So we're on this journey from the old year to the new year. Suddenly, on January 1st, it's a new year. Everything starts anew. And people like have new projects and plans and feel energized, although they're probably recovering from their holidays. But and people, they say gyms are filled with people who like start enroll to have membership at a gym in January, and there's all kinds of deals. Subscribe now, and get a free month and whatever. Many different resolutions people make with this new year. At the end of the year, it's more like, oof, finally. Oof, finally I can stop. And then suddenly the next day, it's, ooh, interesting, huh? What does that mean? No, and how do we relate to that? I'm not putting any judgment on any of this. I'm just an observer of how this works in our world, but also in my own, my own experience of this, of old and new and dark and light and fresh and faded, short and long. I tend to say that my favorite year is the summer solstice, the longest day of the year. And I'm not quite sure why I say that, except that I have very fond memories of lots of things happening. In France, that's also the Fête de la Musique, the music festival. There's music everywhere throughout the country and street corners, bars, concert halls, everywhere there's music. And so people celebrate that longest day. And I guess I like that celebration. But I can't really say, if I really think about it, that's not necessarily my favorite day of the year. I appreciate it and I like it a lot. But I also appreciate this day and like this day. If I allow myself to stop hanging on to the longest day, then I can really experience this. Someone today, my Qigong teacher, who's also Debbie's Qigong teacher, was telling me, with Qigong, you have to do all these, you repeat these movements and repeat them over and over and over again, and he says it takes you have to do it 1,000 times before you can really feel it, the movement, whatever. And I was telling him how, yeah, there's one movement that I've been doing for a long time, and now I can really feel it, and I feel like I got it, Of course, it's never perfect. You can always perfect it. And he said something like, yeah, the thing with Qigong is that, or with everything, actually, it's about letting go of the obstacle to whatever. So in this case, to like a movement that you're supposed to do. And that we all have obstacles to it, according to our bodies, habits and forms and age and whatever. And he said it's just about letting go of those obstacles. Well, that sounds familiar, doesn't it? We say our whole practice is about letting go. And that's really everything is about letting go. So if I let go of my idea that the best day of the year is June 21st, well, then I can really look at the actual day that I'm living without thinking, oh, it's not as good as June 21st, and appreciate the darkness. I like that I can now, with the winter coming, I can, when I wake up in the morning, if it's light outside, I can see light under the curtains, I know that it's probably about 8 o'clock, 7:30, 8. In the summer, I don't know. I could wake up and see light, and it could be like 5:30, and that's really annoying. It's too early for me to get up at 5:30, So I really like this winter when I wake up and see the light under the curtain. I'm like, oh yeah, good. I had a good night's sleep, But I'm not attached to that either. I can just appreciate that aspect of this season. I can look out in my garden and appreciate the winter garden. There's always something to look at there. There's always something to appreciate in that winter garden, or in the summer, or in the spring, or in the fall, whatever. But I can't do that if I'm clinging to June 21st as the best day of the year. So maybe I will stop with that for the moment and hear if you would like to share something in this last session of our calendar year. Lisa.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. It's just that what you just said made me think of this morning. I'm a late. I don't wake up early, and I'm very attached to that. But this morning, I had to. We had a board meeting, so I had to be at 8 at work. So I left home. It was like 7:30, so really early. And it was beautiful, actually, to see to bike down Paris at dawn, but dawn dark. It was still dark. I could see the light starting when I cross. So I work in the center of Paris, and I cross the Pont Neuf, for those who know, every day, with the Louvre on one side and the Eiffel Tower and then Conciergerie on the other side. And anyway, it's quite nice. And it was a totally different view. And I was simply just appreciating having had to wake up so early to go to my meeting, and having had this opportunity to just, see, just be in this moment of darkness. So if I had been stuck to my idea of it's early, I want to be in bed, I didn't sleep enough, and so yeah, it's that.
Yeah, good example. Right. Clara is disconnecting. Happy holidays.
And it's not dark and cold over there where for Clara.
No, it's actually 3 days, 2 days before the summer longest day, 21st of December. So I'm in the opposite place here, enjoying the heat and the beginning of the beach season.
Clara, I love the fact that you come in a summer t-shirt while we're all bundled up in our sweaters. It's great.
Yeah, that's what I felt in September when you were all still short sleeves and I was all covered up. Thank you
Wonderful.
all.
Thank you.
See you next year.
Thank you. Wonderful. Yeah. Southern Hemisphere. Marek.
Good evening, everybody. And if I remember correctly, I had a chance to be with you a year ago when we also talked about the shortest day of year. So it I realized that we made it this year, and perhaps it's an occasion to congratulate all of us for this. And I'd like to say thank you very much for having me every now and then at your meetings. And I appreciate your openness and your friendship. Well, just happy to be with you at this time, which for me it's always more contemplative than active, and so maybe that's why this need to connect with friends as with you now. I won't take too much time, but thanks again.
Thank you, Marek. It's always a pleasure to have you with us. We're happy that you've come.
Yeah, it was wonderful to see you all. I'm so glad I could get here in time to see you one more time before we're into the next, whatever the next thing is. It's funny, I was thinking about this darkness thing because you did talk about it, Roshi, last year. Coming up my street, there's a street light out. It's not scary because there are tons of people. As a matter of fact, some of them said, "Bonsoir, madame." I thought, well, we know each other. I couldn't see them actually. But so I realized that and even when you say the word darkness, I have this pang of terror in my gut. And I think it's a child thing. Because I don't, well, I know I was going to say I like the darkness. It depends on where I am. But it's not the darkness itself, it's the idea of darkness or the word makes me nervous. Bad things happen in the dark. And yet this year I made a really conscious decision to not be anti-winter. I got myself a beautiful coat made, so, and it's warm and I like it. So I wouldn't walk out the door every day of the winter saying, oh, I hate this. There are too many accessories, but okay, I haven't lost anything yet. But I really wanted to change and follow this suggestion of, let's get into this. But I realized that there's some old panic about being alone in the dark. I want to be inside and put the light on.
Yeah, I mean, that's very true, huh? And in throughout culture, the darkness is dangerous and fearful and bad, like you say, bad things happen in the dark, right? That's how we think of things, yeah. Hello, Merlin.
Hey, Roshi, hi everyone. Yeah, this makes me think about how weak I am because I have this wonderful little house in the middle of this space, this natural space, convenient. And I spent my days, some many days there, And during long periods, I thought, but I never stay there at night alone. I mean, alone. And the times I tried to stay there, winter time, I light the fire and stay there. I don't know, about 11 something, I think, oh, I'm not comfortable here. I have to go back. And I go back to the village where I live, in my mother's place. I never slept alone in this place. And I always think, well, the house is not mine until I do it for the first time, because it's really so good to be there at night with someone next to me. Yeah. We see the stars, there is no lights. Well, it's really different. And and I know this, I know the experience to wake up there, it's really different from here in city or even in the village. But I never slept alone there. It's the darkness. Yeah. So it is. Thank you.
Yeah, I can understand. I have stayed in that house, but not alone at night.
Yeah, and I do admire people, and even my daughter, for instance, she easily sleeps there.
Oh, okay.
During COVID, she slept there for weeks.
Oh, okay.
But I never did. It's easier for some people. I don't know.
Well, and that is interesting, isn't it? That we feel if we're alone, it's much worse than if we're with someone else. We can confront the darkness, the mystery, the terror, the fear, whatever, with someone else, but not alone. And I mean, in the relative world, that's absolutely understandable. We know why that is, you know. And yet we can look at that and say, okay. What does that mean? Because actually, we are alone in this world. And some people are terrified of that too, you know, so they never want to be alone. They never want to be single. They always want to be in a relationship, or they always want to live with someone, or things like that. And I guess it's an obvious subject to talk about at this time of year. I guess that's why I talked about it last year too. I don't know if it was on the same, it was on this winter solstice. It was the same thing. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's kind of an obvious, it speaks to me, I guess, and it's relates to our practice so much that. So I apologize if I'm repeating myself. Probably I'm not, because I forgot what I said before and I'm different words now, so.
Can I talk?
Yes, hello, Krisha.
Hi, everyone. Good evening. I was almost forgetting, so sorry. But I am with my children making dinner, and I went to Elvas today, which it's, I think, 2 hours, almost and a half from Lisbon. In the morning, it was beautiful. I see the, I don't know the name, the icy fields, and then the sun coming up. And it's warm again in Portugal. It's about 18 degrees. And I was thinking, I was kind of glad it was my last site construction of this year. Tomorrow, I will have an awful day making all the reports, finishing. And I didn't really wanted to go there, but I was happy to have it done. And it was quite a lovely day. Elvas, it's really beautiful. It has a, I don't know the names, a Coliseum, a big castle, and the city, it's in the castle. Muralhas. And it's beautiful. I'm not remembering the name. I was jumping in because of what Hoshiemi said. What do you mean? We are all alone. Because we are born out of a womb. We're born together. And I'm the kind of person that can go easily away to a weekend on the in the middle of nowhere, staying alone. Sometimes I even like to confront my fear. And I've done that in Marlene's house, but there was people there. I was in a tent confronting my fears of the noise, the noises in the forest that are really strange and they really grow on you. But that wasn't alone, but I can do that alone. I remember going, I don't know, to my mother's house in the middle of nowhere. I remember being there when they didn't have the dogs and when they had, and it's different to have dogs. You don't feel so alone. But usually I don't mind that much. And I'm also one of those persons who like always to be on a relationship or wherever. But I still like to be alone. Okay, everyone, it's one. But I was wondering why we are all alone? Are we all alone? Are we?
Well, you know, maybe we can say we are alone together in the sense that, well, for example, you know, y only you can experience staying in the tent alone in the forest in Marlens. That you're the one who has to experience that. Someone can tell you about it. People who didn't do it, they can listen to your experience, but that they don't know that. It's only an idea for them. You're alone in having that experience. They would and they'll have their experience of it if they come and do that. Or maybe someone was sleeping in the tent next to you, or people were in the house and heard the sounds as well, but each one has their unique place, their unique characteristics, their but we're all a manifestation of the same thing. We just manifest differently. So we're absolutely alone, unique that. So maybe instead of alone, we could say unique, but it translates as alone when we think of it in terms of others.
Okay. Yeah. I thank you. Got that nuance. Yeah. And I'm just taking advantage and wish you all Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. You know, someone told us during at the end of the morning meditation the other day, I don't know who else was there, that she just wanted to share with us that the day before she had ended up in the emergency room because she thought she had a detached retina. And so here she was in the emergency room and she was looking around with all these medical machines and very, you know, hospital atmosphere. And she just suddenly had this feeling of gratitude for having lived decades of her life, having been able to see, and was appreciating in that moment, even being able to see those machines and see those chairs and see that room, because maybe in the next moment she wouldn't be able to see it. And then she was grateful for all of the years that she had lived being able to see all of this. No, not only the hospital room, but all the magnificent life, that she had experienced in her life. And so that's a very unique experience that is only hers. And yet we could all share by expressing it, and we could all share and understand that gratitude. And maybe then the rest of us went into our day and looked differently. Said, oh, yeah, right. I can see that, I can really see this. I can, and then have gratitude for being able to see or not see, or maybe gratitude, we don't like wearing glasses, but gratitude for these glasses that permit us to see, or whatever it is. That was her unique experience. She was alone in that. Nobody else experienced that. And sometimes when we have experiences like that, we can say, why me? Why is everyone else seeing perfectly and I'm having this problem with my eye? We can become victimized by it and whatever. But actually, we're not, it's our experience in that moment, but everyone else is sharing it too, in just in a different way. Was anyone else there that morning when she shared it? Carla was? Yeah.
Now, I was there the ne it's I think it was the next day when she was talking about driving back and how it illuminated the trees were with light. I had missed the first part of her experience because I talked to her again about it again this morning, of that when she was in the car realizing how beautiful everything was, actually. I don't know if that's the same day you were talking about it. She may have done it twice.
Must have been the
She was
next.
pretty touched by the fact that she could see.
Amazing, huh? Yeah.
I just would like to share about attachment, I think. How I have been noticing in my life, especially now, I'm 46. In those moments alone, I never feel alone. I only feel alone when I don't want to be alone.
When you don't
When
want
I
to.
don't want to be alone. And I can really feel alone in those moments. And I know this is about attachment, but I cannot see them. I can be really, really almost desperate. But when I go alone, I never, when I really go and I really enjoy it, I can really enjoy it. I never feel alone. And I guess this is universal, but how it crosses to our practice, and it came out. Thank you again.
Absolutely.
About this light and darkness, kind of opposite aspects, but they are in the same ongoing and folding experiences of the us and the world. And what you said about the someone that was had gratitude for seeing till the day she was not seeing in this medical context, about those opposite experiences, seeing being grateful because she did so till this moment she doesn't see. I can understand this experience because there, when I am in the country, in the field, I don't see many people, almost no one except my mother and animals and people that come there to do something with us. Well, I see people, but I don't go to the village usually. But when I go, it really, I do appreciate the people I see before my eyes, and I feel, oh, I am, this is what we are. There are people working every day. There are many, many people. I do feel a appreciation for, being a part of this world that is there too, not only the trees and the animals and the rural things. And when I came to Lisbon, I need some time to adjust me because it's really very different. But then I do appreciate the trees that I see in this street I live, that are the tilliums, tilliums. You know what it is? They are very big, and I saw those tilliums better than I saw the trees there when I am in the country. You know, it's really, oh, wow! And I see each moment is different when I come back to Lisbon. They are really, wow! The seasons are entering always from every, I don't know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. They are always different, and I do appreciate to see them here because they are so strong and so nice to be there, much more than I see the oaks and the trees every day in there. It's really, it's this, yeah.
Yeah. Yes, when we change positions, when we change places, when we change chairs, even, we see things differently, you know? Whether it's life circumstances, like you have something wrong with your eye, or going to a city instead of being in your usual environment, or we really things it's kind of like his experiment. If you turn it this way, then something emerges. If you turn it the other way, it's not there. We don't see it the same way. It's there. The trees, the oaks and the eucalyptus and whatever is there at Garbalino, but you don't see it in the same way as you see those tiol. And I think it's tiol, right? Is that what it is? Yeah. And that's what our practice is about, actually, is letting go of our usual way of seeing and opening to just being with what is and experiencing, bearing witness to everything as if it's new, as if it's the first time. Sometimes Roshi used to give us this practice of, when you go into your street, wherever you live, or your garden, wherever you live, whatever it is, try to like take the step back and see it as if you're seeing it for the first time. Try to see it like someone who's never been there before is seeing it. It's interesting. It's really changes, how you perceive. And it's just a question of opening, of letting go of the obstacles, like Yuri said, letting go of the obstacles. And the obstacle is our attachment, actually. So, and we're forced by circumstances often. So now we're forced to let go of 2024. and whatever we think it is, and enter open to 2025 and whatever that is. Let go of sitting and talking together on Thursday night until we do it again, but for the next 2 weeks, we won't do it. Actually, 3 weeks, I guess, because we come back on the third week, but letting go and then, wow, opening to whatever it is. So that's what my wish will be for you for the holidays and for this winter break. And thank you for your practice. And as Marek pointed out, gratitude that we're all here and that we're doing this together and joining, sharing, and delving into the mystery. So thank you.
Thank you, Roshi, for taking care of us.
Thank you.